want to do something a little different this morning. There's a part of me that really misses the old boathouse, and where we all sat on one level. Of course, then I remember tearing up, setting up, tearing down, and it goes away. But I wanted to just sit here and talk to you this morning for a couple of reasons. There's been a lot of things going on this week that have really kind of informed what I want to talk about today. But the other thing that has really been on my mind is that sitting here is a graphic reminder that even though you do me the honor of letting me teach and work with you and counsel, but we are all on this journey and path together, you know? You got to remember that. We all have to remember that. I'm figuring it out as you're figuring it out. We're all doing this together. And I am so glad that you want to share your journey with me, but I'm sharing my journey with you. And believe me, I learn as much from you all every single week as I teach. And I'm so grateful for the people who have opened up and shared themselves with me. And what I've been getting this week and kind of the week before, not only from myself, but also from the people around me, is a lot of heartbreak, a lot of difficulty. And I think that's what I want to talk about this morning. And this is one of the more unformed messages that I'm going to try to give you. And so I don't exactly know what's going to come out. Someone once told me that all you need is the first line of a message, just the first line, and everything will follow. So I'm just going to start talking, and we'll see what comes out. Let me ask you all a question. How many of you have had your heart broken? Maybe I should ask it the other way. Is there anybody here who has never had their heart broken? You know? Exactly. You know? Is there anybody here who's never broken someone else's heart? You know, we cannot go through life without heartbreak. We can't go through life without breaking someone else's heart. In a very real way, life is not supposed to be lived without heartbreak. Does that sound strange to you? The journey of life, the journey of the spirit, the journey to adulthood begins with a wounding. Have you ever heard that one before? The hero's journey, that the stories that keep repeating over and over again through human history, from the Iliad and the Odyssey of Homer to Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, and with Dorothy Gale and the tornado in between, every one of those journeys begins with a wounding. Because without the wounding, there is no impetus to go anywhere. It's the wounding that starts the process. You know? Think about a child. Nobody gets through childhood unscarred. Nobody gets through childhood unscathed. There is always going to be something that wounds us deeply at the beginning, and it has to. Those of you who have children, those of you even who have younger brothers and sisters, you know, children are the most narcissistic people on the planet. They really and truly believe that the world revolves around them. They need to. An infant only knows. When Dean was up here, I'm watching him. Dean doesn't even know that he's separate from his parents, or that his parents are separate from him. They are all one. He sees his mother and father and the faces around him as extensions of himself. He doesn't know he's a separate being. He's going to find out. And when he finds out, he's going to find out with a wounding. Because it hurts to find out that you're not the center of the universe. It hurts to find out that you are separate from the people who have been providing. And sometimes, guess what? They don't provide. And even more than that, sometimes they actually hurt you. Sometimes they betray you. Sometimes they let you down. Do you remember I talked about the well frog here a while back? And the line from Chuang Tzu, an ancient Chinese philosopher, that was so wonderful to get the point across, he said, "You cannot speak of ocean to a well frog, the creature of a narrower sphere." You cannot speak of ice to a summer insect, the creature of a single season. When your sphere is narrow, when your world is built around a small area, you don't even know there's anything outside of that. You don't even know there's a there. And so where I like to go from that is, how do you speak of perfect love to a human being, the creature of a broken heart? We are creatures of a broken heart. We are defined by our broken heart. Do you buy that? Do you think that's true? Even the story of Adam and Eve in Genesis is trying to get this truth across to us. And you all know the story. Adam and Eve, they disobey the Lord. The Lord says, you can eat anything in the garden except of this one tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And of course, that's the one they eat from. And he says, on that day, you will surely die. And they are expelled from the garden afterwards. Before they ate, they didn't even know they were naked. They stood in complete transparency, utter transparency with their Father. And after they eat, they realize they're naked and they cover themselves up. And then they go off and they have to, by the sweat of their brow, they have to earn their living. And in pain, they bear children and so on and so forth. We have taken that story to mean a simple disobedience and a retribution by God. But what I want you to consider is that this story is really the telling of everyone's journey, both us as a race and us as individuals. See you, Joe. Yeah. When you think of a child, the child is in the garden. The child is born in the garden. Dean is in the garden right now. He doesn't know he's naked. He doesn't know he's separate. He's walking in the cool of the evening with his Lord. But at some point, what are the terrible twos all about? The terrible twos is when the youngster finally realizes he can say one word, and that word is no, the favorite word of the two-year-old. They can exert their own will. They can actually start to make things happen in their favor at times. That is the beginning of the end of innocence. That is the beginning of the end of the garden living. That is the road towards the age of reason, as we call it, but actually better in a more egg-headed way. It's the moment of self-awareness. It's the moment that we become aware of ourselves as a separate and individual being. What do you think the price of self-awareness is? The price of self-awareness is the realization that you are separate, that you are alone, that things can happen to you that don't happen to other people, that they can do things to you. You know, the price of being a human being is self-awareness. The part of us that is created in God's image is self-awareness. Why? Because self-awareness gives us the ability to make a choice. Without the ability to make a choice, there is no possibility for love. Love requires choice. God gave us the ability to make a choice by giving us self-awareness, which at the same time gives us loneliness and heartbreak. It's a natural consequence. And once that we pass that age of reason, once we become self-aware, the way is barred back to the garden with the cherubim with the flaming swords. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. You know, this is what Scripture on a very deep level is trying to tell us, both as a race where God imbued in us this ability to make a choice, and each one of us as individuals that go through our life. You want to talk about original sin? You know, what we think of as original sin is usually that Adam and Eve did their disobedience and now we've been cursed ever since. But what original sin really is the basic human condition of understanding and knowing that we are a separate being. And that loneliness, the fear that sets in, that we may not be able to get what we need, that the things that we ultimately need may not be provided for us, is all we need to go down this path. You know, as a minister myself, there are a couple of things that I'm not really prepared for, I haven't been prepared for. And one of the things that I didn't think about as I was training for the ministry and as I've experienced it over the last few years is the rapidity with which people move in and out of my life. You know, it's really just part of a faith community. It's part of church life. People come into a community and they leave a community for all sorts of reasons. They come in sometimes as clients for counseling, sometimes as dependents who really need healing. But the lines get blurred between those kind of roles and just friendship. And so people come into my life that I really like and I enjoy seeing every time that they come through the door, and then suddenly they're gone. You know, and not because, you know, there's anything personal, there's all sorts of reasons that they're gone. And sometimes I don't even know what the reasons were. Three and a half years ago, there was one guy that was in my life, and we were like tied at the hip. And I would have bet you that we would have kind of gotten old together and croaked, you know, and whatever it was that we were doing. And then he just disappeared without a word. And I couldn't even really contact him or get anything out of him as to why. What changed? I you know. And then what do? You go through your mind all the things that that you did or might have done, and you try to figure all these things out. And I still don't know what happened. But I do know that this is part of my life, working in a faith community, that people are going to come and go. But it's not just me. It's all of you. Everyone has people come into their lives and leave. Those of you who are parents, you know, you raise your children up, you know, from the tiny sweet stage, and then they grow up, and sometimes they grow apart, and sometimes they leave the house, or sometimes that they start acting out in ways that you never saw coming, and your heart's broken. Some of us as children are so wounded by parents and others around us that we've got knots tied in our cord that are just seemingly impossible to untie. All these things are going on. I had a conversation with a woman this week who is deathly afraid of allowing her daughter to go with her daughter's father because she doesn't know if it's going to be all right. And so all the time that the little girl is with her father, she's worrying. You know, she's frantic. She's spinning in her mind. I talked to another young man who is trying to connect with the people around him, and he just can't seem to do it. He tries to connect. He thinks he's got friends. They fade in and out of his life. You know, these are the kind of heartbreaks that we're talking about. These are the kind of difficulties. Last week we talked about gratitude as being the basic attitude of kingdom. If we can maintain an attitude of gratefulness for all these gifts that we could not give ourselves, that is the same as living in kingdom. But the question is, how do you do that? How do you do that when your heart's being broken every other day? How do you do that when the people that you love and care about and have come to depend on in certain ways are suddenly exiting your life? When spouses aren't faithful, when people drink and use and do all the things that they do, how do we maintain that attitude? How do we do that? And that's what I want to talk about. Because we can talk about concepts and ideals in a sort of abstract sense, but if we can't bring it down to what we actually do, then it's nearly impossible to see a way through. And that's what Jesus was about, showing us a way of living that gets us through these things. And so, let me do it this way. Do you remember 4 years ago, almost to the day, when the tsunami rolled through Indonesia? Wasn't it Christmas Day 2004 that thing hit? Remember that? And the devastation was incredible, and we all watched it on television. You know, they're right at ground zero. It was the island of Sumatra that had the quake, and it rolled through what is called the Andaman Sea, which is this little body of water between the coast of Thailand and Burma and the Suri Islands that kind of run out in a string from the tip of Sumatra. And that sea is a very shallow sea dotted with all these little islands. It was ground zero for the tsunami. There was one group of people that lost not a single person to the tsunami, even though they were right in the middle of its path. This people was called the Moken. That's what they call themselves, the Moken. Other people call them the Sea Gypsies. They are one of the tribes, one of the aboriginal peoples on the planet that is least touched by civilization. They're an amazing people. They spend sometimes 7 to 8 months a year at sea in their little boats, tiny little boats, little outrigger things. They have literally transmorphed into an amphibious people. You know, their children learn to swim before they learn to walk. They can see twice as clearly underwater as the rest of us can. They can at will lower their heart rate so that they can stay underwater twice as long for their diving and the things that they do for sustenance. and they can read the ocean like the back of their hand. They knew when the tsunami was coming, and they knew exactly what to do. Those who were on land went to higher ground. Those who were in the boats paddled out to deeper water. And not one was killed because they knew so well what was going on. And in the media glare that followed the tsunami, the Moken got to be known a little better because people wanted to know, what was it about them that allowed them to survive this? And one of the most fascinating things that came out of the study was that the Moken people have no words in their vocabulary for want, for goodbye, for hello, for when. They have no word in their vocabulary for the word when. Now I want you to stop for a second and think about this. If you don't have a word in your vocabulary for something, it's because you don't even have a mental concept for that thing. If you don't have a word in your vocabulary for the word when, then you have no concept of time or the passage of time. None of the Moken know how old they are. They don't count birthdays. They don't celebrate birthdays. They have no concept for want. No, nobody is miserly sharing or gathering things to themselves and depriving others of it. You know, it's almost as if they're one organism with lots of individual parts, rather than a lot of individuals trying to work as a group. How exactly does one organism deprive itself of something? There is no concept for that. And it's not just the Moken, but the Apayo Indian tribe in the Philippines has no word for thank you. They don't have any concept of private ownership either. It is a communal society to the core. And if you don't have any concept for hello or goodbye, that means that you really don't take notice of when people leave or when they come back. There's no sadness at parting. There's no celebration at return and reunion. Bizarre to us, but they are so living in a here-now moment that presence is everything to them. They take no notice of the absence. It's all the presence to them. The Aborigines of Australia are another group, probably the oldest continuous culture that the world has. The Aborigines have a concept called dream time. Have you heard of dream time? Now, they do have a concept of linear time, a past, a present, and a future. But to them, dream time describes the absolute and fundamental laws of the universe. And dream time is really all-at-once time. There's one anthropologist that calls it every-when. I love that. Every-when. It's past, present, and future all together at once. It's a singularity of time all together. And it's the same idea. They think that is the way that the universe is actually described and not linear time. We think linear time is the way, is the undergirding of the universe, and then dream time is something that is subjective. But here's the point that I want to make with y'all. If we could take a page out of the Moken's handbook, if we can learn not so much to focus on the absence of things, but on the presence of things, I think we can start to get a step closer to what Jesus was trying to tell us about kingdom. Because kingdom is that quality of life that can be understood, that can be experienced and enjoyed when we are present to the present, when we are really here, when we are connected with each other. When somebody leaves, when we get our hearts broken, when somebody betrays us, we are completely and utterly focused on the absence of something that we desperately want. And when we are doing that, when that young woman I told you about is worried about her daughter, where is she now, here? She's nowhere. Because she is, in her mind, obsessing over the absence of something. And whoever is present to her, she doesn't even see. Think about the gift of our presence for just a moment. Our lives are made up of the time we have. You know, from birth to death, we don't know how much time we've got. But when we give our presence to someone, since we can't be in two places at once, what a gift is that presence. We are saying to a person, it is of all the places that I could possibly be at this moment, I choose to be with you. you are the most important person and the most important place for me to be at this moment, because I can only be one place, and I choose to be with you. Do you know what a statement that makes? Do you know how important that is? And yet we are so cavalier about our presence. Wherever we are, sometimes we're off in our mind someplace, again, obsessing over the absence of something rather than the presence of something. We can't live in dream time all the time in our lives. Obviously, that's impossible. We got to be able to plan, and we got to be able to do the things that the modern civilized life requires. But we need to be able to move back into dream time. We need to be able to move back into kingdom. We need to be able to focus on the things and the people that are present to us rather than the people and the things that are not. When our hearts are broken, we retreat into our heads. We retreat into our minds. We retreat into past and future, anything but present, because the present hurts too much. But the present is the only place that we can find the sustenance, the comfort, and the reconnection that we so desperately desire. It only exists here and now. There was a woman in a study group that I was doing when I first talked about the Mokin a few years ago, and she was just shaking her head the whole time as I was talking about him. And I finally asked her, you know, penny for your thoughts, what's going on in your head? And she just said, I can't imagine not celebrating my daughter's birthday. You know, I can't imagine not feeling sadness when she leaves or joy when she returns. And to some of us, and most of us, I would think, the Mokin seem almost alien. They seem less than human somehow, because they don't love in the way that we love. And we can't understand a love that doesn't include these basic things to us. Does it seem that way to you? How do you even compute with something like that? And yet, there is a wisdom there about being so present to those you are with that it completely, even for the moment, blots out the thoughts that you have of those who are absent. If we can learn to be present that way, we can learn to live more as Jesus lived. What was it about Jesus that riveted the people around him? Have you ever been with somebody that you really thought was listening to you, that looked right into your eyes and spoke to you, heard what you said, responded to what you said, that you knew was processing what you were saying and not just waiting to speak? It's an amazing experience, isn't it? And you remember that person, don't you? The people of your past, whether they were teachers or friends, those who really listened to you and you knew cared about you and were present to you, they stick in your mind. Try to imagine what Jesus was like when he was with you and you felt the magnetism of that presence, and you felt that you were the only person in the world at that moment to him, because you were. Because at that moment, he gave you his entire attention and presence. At that moment, you were the most important person that he could possibly be with. That's kingdom. And if we can start to do that, we can start to learn to live, even though our human condition is as a creature of a broken heart, we can learn to live in a different realm. How do you do that? I'll tell you. I had a really bad week this week. There's a couple of times, Marion will tell you, I came this close to just completely losing it. You know, I've been pushed to the edge. And I had to stop, and I literally talked to myself, Dave, you're doing it again. Here you go. And I talked myself down off the ledge. I told myself, you are completely living in your head, and all these things that I'm telling you, I went through mentally, and I just said this short prayer, God, bring me back to you. You know, let me reconnect with you, with Marion, with whomever I'm with. And it worked. For a few moments, I reconnected. For a few moments, the heaviness lifted, and then it would descend again. And then I'd do it again. You know what? If you have to do it every 10 seconds, 24 hours a day, do it. It's the reconnection. It's coming right back into the moment again. How do we do this? We do this by learning to live in a different way. We learn to process information in a different way. We learn to be present in a way that we haven't been present before. Is it going to happen overnight? Absolutely not. But if you have to do it every 10 seconds, every 10 minutes on day one, by day two, maybe it's every 15 minutes, and then every 30 minutes. And then all of a sudden you realize that your life is no longer characterized by the brokenheartedness. Your life is now characterized by kingdom, by something else. And you never really saw when the transition happened, but you realize more often than not, I am present, I am connected, and I'm feeling that sense of well-being and connectedness, deep connectedness that comes when I am connected to the people around me and to nature and to God. And yes, I do take my trips over to the dark side. But then you stop yourself again. As soon as you become aware, there's your self-awareness again. We can become aware that we have moved over into this other place. And we can stop and we can reconnect with God's presence, His Spirit, and with each other. I don't know any other way to do this. It has nothing to do with our ultimate salvation. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about right here and right now, living an abundant life that Jesus said that we could live. He said, these things that you see me do, you will do. Greater things than these. If He could do it, He said we could do it. We can live with that kind of presence. That even though the basic human condition is that original sin of living the brokenhearted life, of being aware of our separateness, when we connect in the present this way, we obliterate that. And we live in a whole different realm. I would encourage you, I would beg you, please, those of you who are really hurting, those of you who I've spoken to and those of you that I haven't spoken to, and myself included, when we are feeling that brokenheartedness, when we are feeling that heaviness and that loss, stop. Think about where you are and who you're with. And see how you are not present to that person, that place. And reconnect at that moment. Will yourself, force yourself just to be present. Look deeply into the person's eyes. Hear what they're saying. Care about what they're saying. And for whole moments at a time, you take a vacation from yourself. And you move into this place of connectedness again. Maybe we can't go all the way back to the garden. I don't think we're supposed to go back to the garden in the way that we were there as Dean is now, the infant. Because now we have a choice. But to choose to go back to kingdom, which is living as if we were in the garden, with a full awareness of who we are as a son or daughter of our God, is incredible. To feel that connectedness, to know who you are, to have meaning and purpose. We can live as if we're not creatures of a broken heart, and we can change the whole face of our lives, and then we begin to change the face of the lives of those around us, because they will be attracted and impelled to find out what it is that allows us to be so present to them. Everybody, I love you so much. I can't tell you what it means to me to be able to sit here with you this last week with everything that was going on, the craziness of the schedule that kind of wore me down, but at the same time, the exhilaration of all the people that came out and helped and gave of themselves, the sense of community that was happening. You know, I didn't really even have to work very hard to connect with everybody in all of these moments, from decorating the room to the soak and all of this. Enter into the community that is here and available to you. Connect with the people who would love to connect with you. It's just an amazing, amazing life that God has for us. And I just want to see us all be able to enter in that deep way. And if you are having problems that you can't cope with, if you are having insurmountable things that are keeping you from this, then come see us. You know, there's Pastor Daryl and me and Pastor Jeff and Pastor Bill, and there's so many people here that are just aching to be able to connect with you. That's why we're here, and that's what we're doing. Let's pray. Father, sometimes it is overwhelming to hear what's going on in people's lives, the amount of pain and the disconnectedness. But you are greater than any of these things that are in our lives. You are our overcomer. If we can just hitch our wagon to your Spirit, we can overcome. The things that feel so hopeless sometimes, they're not hopeless at all. And with almost like the flick of a switch, Everything changes. Even when our circumstances don't change a bit, we change within the circumstances, and everything is colored differently. Everything smells different. Everything feels different. Father, that's what we're after. We're after you. We're after more of you than we even think is as much as we can stand. Give us more. Help us to connect with you in that way. Help us to help each other to connect with you in that way. And Father, thank you for our growing community. Thank you for these people that love you and love each other. It is a privilege to be able to stand here in your name. And we thank you for everything that you've given us, Lord, in Jesus' name.